Facilitating this morning and was excited when Cindy asked me to facilitate this section of the program because it's actually one of my favorite sections of the program. And before we get started, Cindy does want to make a couple of announcements. And since you were diligent in showing up, we'll even have a door prize before our first speaker. So here's Cindy.
Good morning, everybody. Are you having a good time? Yeah. All right. I'm having a good time, too, and my voice is going away, but I'm still here, and just a couple of announcements. So please, before any meals, make sure you have your name tag on. On your name tag, and I should have announced this on Friday morning, but on your name tag are dots that show what meals you have paid for. We've had a few party crashers in our meals, and these meals cost us a lot of money. You guys know how much meals are costing in this hotel. And so it's not any less for the banquet. And but we want everyone to have a good time. But most of you, all of you probably in this room, have paid your registration and for your meals. And so if we have extras, then we pay for those extras. And that's really not fair to any of you that paid and for WCB either. So I need a couple of things from you. One, please have your name tag on. You need it also for this afternoon's voting. You need to make sure you have your green dot. It should be on the upper left-hand corner of your name tag. When it's on you and you reach into the pocket, that's where you'd feel it, to the upper left-hand corner. So when you're looking at it, it's to the right. But when when it's on you, it'd be on your left. And it's a green dot. That says you're a member and you can vote. If you do not have that name tag on and that green dot, you will not be given voting privileges this afternoon. And it's an important afternoon because we have great elections going on. And so we want you to be able to participate. If there are any sighted participants in the room that would be willing to help with at the doors of lunch and at the banquet to watch for people with their name tags, please come see me. I'm going to be sitting to the far right of this room when you are facing the podium in that first row somewhere or near it, near door prizes. I'm going to go sit near Mika. If you could come see me, I probably need about three or four people to help us with the doors. And we're going to just be watching for the name tags and making sure nobody comes in that shouldn't. So please help me out with that. I want to be a good steward with the money of WCB. And so I appreciate your assistance with this. And if anybody can help me, I would really appreciate it. And I think that's it. Most importantly, just continue to have a great time. Thank you. Glenn.
Cindy, it's Frank. Can I make an announcement?
Go for it.
Or Glenn? Sure. Yeah, I've still got a Bluetooth cordless headset that we picked up at the board meeting. And
yes, I'm here.
Yeah. What brand is it? Oh, it is yours. Okay. I thought you were kidding.
Well, I'm glad we found a home for that. I was the one that picked it up off the table and brought it over to Frank after the board meeting, and we wondered if somebody was going to claim it. So, you want a door prize?
I don't know. They don't sound that excited.
It sounds like a bunch of vultures looking for a... Okay, we'll have one door prize, and then we'll...
All right, so it definitely pays to get here on time. So somebody in this room is going to get $25 from donated by Carol Gray. So, or from PCB, rather. Yeah, Carol Gray from PCB. All right. Laughing at me does not get you a door prize. No. Holly Hines.
Right. Holly, are you here? I don't hear her.
Holly, are you here? Okay.
Oh, another one.
Sherry Dubin. All right.
Oh, we have a winner.
Get your money, honey.
Oh, before we go any further, we also want to say good morning to our friends listening on ACB Radio. I know they're out there. Give them a round for... So as I mentioned when I first came up here a minute ago, this segment of our program is always one of my highlights for the convention, just because I think it's one of our more important pieces that we do, the two pieces that we're doing here this morning. The first one being our national update, because, you know, a lot of us in this organization, we have 450 members, and there's only a very small percentage of us. The last couple of summers, it's been maybe about 5% of our members who actually have the time and the resources and stuff available to attend a national convention. And so those of us who go to the national convention and who subscribe to ACB's mailing list and stuff, we stay up on a lot of the issues at the national level and try to bring... Oh, that sounds much better. Now I can actually back up a little bit. Try to inform other people about it. But if you're a member who's never been to a national convention, you may hear names and you may know some of the players, but you haven't ever met these people, and it's, you know, you wonder who they are, and you wonder how you fit into the whole organization. And so it's always great when we can have someone come and give an update so that everyone's kind of in the loop and can feel more about, you know, part of that family of ACB. And so as your first vice president of WCB, it is my pleasure to introduce your first vice president of the American Council of the Blind from Sacramento, California. And by the way, he's the best dressed man in the room because he's the only one wearing a suit and tie today, Jeff Tom.
Okay, thank you, Glenn. It's great to be here. I want to thank Cindy and the leadership for inviting me. I know so many of you. Washington, to me, is like my second affiliate. I love you guys here. It's just so great. No place better. No place better. So it's just extra special to be up here whenever I get the chance. I bring you greetings from... almost the entire board of directors, from Kim Charlson and everyone else, except for Burl, who has to bring you his own greetings. For everybody else, just have a lot of exciting things to talk to you about today. And on behalf of the American Council of the Blind, the first one, our big news is we just very recently hired a new executive director, Eric Bridges, whom many of you know. Used to be in charge of our governmental affairs session, and he is now, obviously, our new executive director. And you might say, what does that really mean to me? I'm far away. I don't know these people in the Beltway. What does that matter? Well, it matters a lot in many ways to have the staff leader of your organization who's young, who's bright, who's energetic, very innovative. A gentleman who has a tremendous reputation on Capitol Hill and who also has been doing an incredibly good job with corporate America, working and talking with big corporations. And this helps in a variety of areas. It helps in terms of funding for ACB, and it also helps in terms of advocacy with industry. I think that ACB is really going to be on the cutting edge in the coming years with a lot of advocacy initiatives, and I think that having Eric Bridges at the helm of our organization is going to really pay dividends, not just to ACB as an organization, but to all of us as blind people in our daily lives. So that's my prediction, and I think it's going to come true over the years, and I think... I would just urge you to be listening for more from Eric. You will undoubtedly hear a lot from him over the years, and I think it's going to make a big difference to all of us. So let's talk a little bit about a couple pieces of legislation. To some of you, this will be things that you've heard before. To others of you, it will not. But ACB is currently involved in, really three legislative efforts. I'll mention one briefly, and that is there is a treaty, the Marrakesh Treaty. Treaties have to be passed by the United States Senate in order to become law in our country. That's in the Constitution. And this treaty was passed a few years ago. It got through, it was signed, I should say, by a number of nations. And it basically provides for openness in terms of copyright for one country's books in accessible formats to be used by other countries. And this especially helps developing countries who don't have access to, you know, Braille and audio and large print the way we do over here. So we can give them our, you know, the resources that we have, the resources that the, you know, British Commonwealth nations have. So that treaty in the very not too distant future is apparently going to be prepared, a package, and at some point very soon it may end up going to start the process for passage in the Senate. Now that's a very tough process, and it there's no way to know how that process will go, but we're going to be lobbying on that at some point in the not too distant future, and when we do, we'll certainly hope that your two senators are among those that you will bring around to push for that treaty. So that's that. We have two pieces of legislation, two bills that are currently in Congress. The first one is HR, and in fact, what I think I will do is if there's a question about a particular thing, instead of trying to wait till the end, although our time is somewhat limited, if you have a burning question about a particular thing, just shout out my name and we'll work on that question because you'll probably forget the question by the end. Okay.
Do we have a mic runner so we can...
Yeah, that'd be a good idea because we are recording. But let's try that and see if it works. I know it's not the traditional way, but I hate to leave people hanging. Our first piece of legislation, so raise your hand, I guess, if you do have a question, and they can interrupt me and run the mic, if we can do that. H.R. 3535 is the Alice Cogswell and Sullivan Macy Act. Alice Cogswell was the first deaf student to be formally trained in the United States, and Ann Sullivan Macy was Helen Keller's teacher. This is the most comprehensive special education piece of legislation since the landmark Individuals with Disabilities Education Act. It would cover deaf, blind, and deaf-blind students in grades K through 12. It's a bipartisan piece of legislation. Mr. Cartwright, Congressman Cartwright of Pennsylvania, who's a Democrat, and a Republican, Mr. McKinley, I don't think he's related to the president, I don't know, the ex-president, from West Virginia. And it does a number of things, and I'll only go through a few of them, but it tries to ensure that every student with sensory disabilities is identified, evaluated, and served. Right now, if you have a child, for example, that has an intellectual disability or an autistic spectrum disorder disability, but who also has a severe vision impairment, they may be left in the dust in terms of the blindness-related services they need. They may get the services on the other side of their disability, but obviously if you don't cover the whole child, the services they get are just not going to be adequate to meet their needs. So we want to make sure that the child is served completely with respect to the disability-related services that they need. It requires states to engage in strategic planning for appropriate types of services, including the expanded core curriculum, which, you know, means not just your academic services, but orientation and mobility, socialization, things like that. And it also requires the Department of Education, the U.S. Department of Education, to do more to ensure states comply with their legal obligations to provide services that our kids need. And finally, it establishes a national collaborative organization called the Ann Sullivan Macy Center on Vision Loss and Educational Excellence to come up with best practices for teaching students with vision loss. And this, if this ever gets off the ground, could really be an impactful way of assisting folks in the field. Let me go now to the second. And before I get off of that, you know, what we need from you, obviously, is to get co-sponsors for that bill. It's going to be tough to get it passed. In any bill is tough to pass in this Congress, as we know, with Congress being the way it is. Both parties just can't agree on much of anything in terms of our Congress, so it's hard to get much through. But, yes, as Glenn said, they did get a budget deal through, so that may be a ray of hope. Write to all your Washington congressional representatives, urging them to pass H.R. 35. Write, email, call, all of the above. Now we'll go on to the second piece of legislation, H.R. 729. It is the Medicare Demonstration of Coverage for Low Vision Devices Act of 2015. A long name for a fairly simple but really important bill. Currently, there's an eyeglass exclusion under Medicare, and that exclusion has been interpreted to prohibit anything with a lens from being covered, including all low vision aids. This bill would create a 5-year demonstration project to cover the most powerful, expensive, and really important low vision aids, the type that you have to get with a prescription, you know, from an ophthalmologist or an optometrist. And it is a very important piece of legislation to see how cost effective it would be to permanently put this into Medicare. It is authored by a Democrat Maloney from New York and a Republican Bilirakis from Florida. It also has 10 other co-sponsors, and I'm proud to say that 3 are from my home state, and 1, Mr. Heck, is from Washington. So, yeah. So write, Mr. Heck. That's right. Write to Mr. Heck and congratulate him and thank him for taking on the co-sponsorship. And, again, get in touch with all of your congressional representatives and urge them to co-sponsor H.R. 729, because this really, another thing that I would suggest that you do is to go to places like, you know, companies that sell these equipment. I was talking to InVision yesterday, and I said, hey, why don't you guys get on board with this? To lighthouses, have those folks. We have lots of allies in the field, but we can always use more. And anybody that has some potential clout, have those folks get on board with this bill. It's in their interest to do it. So let's see what we can do. Okay, let me tell you about a few things that are coming up. In ACB, we're having, and this relates absolutely to what I've just been discussing, we're having our annual legislative seminar in Washington, D.C., along with the president's meeting and the mid-year board meeting from February 27th through March 1st. I really hope that Washington, as you usually do, has some representatives there. California and Washington do a pretty good job of representing the West Coast. And I think Oregon's going to actually have some folks there this time, too. So we're even going to have better representation for our coast. We don't want the East Coast folks to think it's just all them back there in the Midwest. We've got to show that the left coast can do our job, too. So, and we're going to be at a new, not new in terms of just built, but a different hotel this year, Crown Plaza Old Town in Alexandria. A lot of dining around there. And it actually won't be too far. Another thing that's happening in January is that the ACB office is moving into new digs in Alexandria, Virginia. So $109, which for Washington is D.C. environs, is a pretty amazing rate per night. So hopefully we can all get together, those who can make it, and do some lobbying on Capitol Hill. And I will say one thing, and I suspect you've heard this from folks in your own delegation, but I can only speak for Californians, but I can speak for a lot of them. when people come back from Capitol Hill, it's not that you all of a sudden get something passed into law or whatever, but it's such an amazing experience to do this. People come back instant advocates, and they want to continue their advocacy work in their home states. And it carries over not just to all the federal issues, but to their advocacy at the state and local levels. I don't know how many people we've turned on to advocacy by having that experience on Capitol Hill. So I think it really does pay off in the states long after that initial taste of wandering around on Capitol Hill. So let me talk to you briefly for a few more minutes before we do something special on a couple of advocacy issues that have been worked on. We have currently going on a case in the Washington, D.C. area that with actually Eric Bridges as one of the plaintiffs, where along with ACB, where they are suing several taxi companies. They actually did some videos with Eric and his guide dog, on one corner and some sighted person on the other, and they'd go to the sighted person and leave Eric there, right? So they are that's currently being, there's litigation involved in that. We have been involved in work with many other, we've been involved in work with drugstore chains, I'm trying to turn to my next page. In discussions with Netflix, we had someone at our convention this summer from Netflix, and it's the type of collaborative efforts that ACB engages in that really pay off, and that's why this organization is as incredible an organization as it really is. I think that you're also going to, those of you that are able to, as Glenn says, it is a little tough, but we're going to be having our next two conventions are in very cool spots. In 2017, which I love because I can get there by bus or train, is going to be in Reno, and I love Reno. I think Reno is a great place, so I say look forward to that. Yeah. And in 2016, we're going to be in Minneapolis, which is also one of my favorite places. It's not as hot. It's not like some places we have to go to. Minneapolis is a lovely city, a lot of nice places to go. They're planning some wonderful tours. I'm not going to scoop them today. I'll wait till they formally announce them, but they're going to be some pretty incredible things to do. That's going to be July 1st to 9th of 2016. The room rate is $89 and plus tax. And I can give you a phone number. Would people like the phone number? Is that important enough? It's pretty far ahead. I'll throw it out there. 888-421-1442. 421-1442 at the Hyatt Regency. Very nice hotel. We were just, Bro and I were just haunting it last weekend. So, in fact, it's one of the hotels that was used at a prior convention by ACB a few years ago. So I think everybody will enjoy themselves. I think they're going to have a lot of nice surprises next year. So with that, before we do something a little special, are there any questions? I wanted to leave a little time for questions. So, yes, but I don't have that date in front of me.
I have
a
question. Is it too early to make your reservations now, or have they set it up yet?
For Minneapolis?
Yes.
I think you can do it now. Yes. Yeah, that's why they have the phone number. So I haven't done mine, but I'm sure you can. See, Glenn's already got his room already reserved, so there you go.
Any other questions?
Glenn's ahead of the game. Any other questions?
Okay, 1 minute.
Okay, so what we want to do...
Question.
Oh, there is one more. Did I hear Bruce say there is one?
Yep.
Okay.
Is it on?
My name is Kat Wifter, and I didn't hear the year for the Reno
convention?
2017.
2017. Thank
yeah.
you.
Not all that far off. At the Nugget again. We've been to the Nugget before. It's a great, great place. Family owned and operated. They have actually sold it, but the family still is heavily involved in, you know, in its activities. Just super, super place to go. I really enjoy it. Okay, anyone else? Okay, so what we'd like to do...
One question.
Oh,
so
yeah.
On the HR 17, whatever it was... Is there
729?
729. Is there a budget impact on that?
There is. There is, you know, anytime you have a cost that you add to a program like Medicare, it's going to cost some money. But it's not a lot because it would only be a very... You're not talking about eyeglasses or even the type of, you know, inexpensive low vision aids that you could get at a store or even at, you know, you go pick up a, you know, $50, $100 one at the lighthouse or whatever. You're talking about the really sort of more expensive ones of people who really need them, who are severely visually impaired. So it wouldn't have an extremely high. And one of the reasons for this is to determine whether the benefits of having these low vision aids out there and in use to the folks that would get them will really be offset in large part by the by offsetting them against the cost of keeping those people in the community and keeping them living independently and maybe keeping them in jobs. So they want to do a cost-benefit analysis as part of that pilot project. Did I answer your question? Where do you get a mic?
You mentioned about contacting our representatives. Do you mean should we contact the House of Representatives who represent us or the Senate?
Basically, it would not hurt to contact your senator, although they don't have a... you know, if somebody is interested in, you know, authoring the bill in the Senate, but mainly we're trying to get additional co-sponsors from our members of the House at this point. But certainly if, you know, if Senator Murray was hot to trot on introducing a companion bill to H.R. 729, I'm sure that Eric would be absolutely thrilled to, you know, get that particular bit of news. Okay, so what we'd like to do for you, ACB last, I guess, spring, I think, produced, and it was initially played at the ACB convention in Dallas, has come up with a great employment-related video, which you'll be thrilled to know, as you're going to hear, is audio described. I actually presented it yesterday in downtown Seattle to the National Conference of State Agencies for the Blind. We have played this video, or corporations have used this video, Sprint, Chase, IBM, Microsoft already. It's the type of thing, I'll give you the link to it, it's the type of thing you can use at schools, with employers, at employment fairs. We want it to be a tool that all of you can use to promote employment and really to promote the idea of even among the just public at large as to what blind people can do. I think the video, you're going to see it, it's pretty self-explanatory. So it is called Blind Ability, Willing, Able, and Seeking Opportunity. And let me give you, I'll give you the links to get it at the end after we play it. So let's, have you got it queued up there?
We come to an interview and our disability is readily apparent.
You're going to have to increase the level a little bit.
They saw a blind man walking in with a dog and two hearing aids, and all they could think about was, how am I going to get to my office every day?
It's not an enabling word. And yeah, I'm blind. And I'm fine saying I'm blind. And there are things I can't do. But I know what I can do.
You need to be flexible, and you need to be prepared to demonstrate your capabilities. Is it fair? Maybe not. But it's life.
America is a country at work. It's our calling card, the land of opportunity, but not for everybody.
A video montage of graphics and images depicts Americans at work.
Among persons who are blind or visually impaired, the unemployment rate is about 70%.
Images of people who are blind using canes. A graphic reading 70% appears.
Now perhaps you're not surprised to hear that. After all, think about how often you use your sight. Could you find a way to do your job without it? Don't answer that question until you've seen this.
An animated logo of the American Council of the Blind. A title, Blind Ability, Willing, Able, and Seeking Opportunity. An office nameplate reads Tony Stevens. Two men, one of whom is blind, meet around a table. Tony Stevens, Public Policy and Advocacy Manager, National Industries for the Blind.
Biggest barrier, really, for people who are blind, and probably for people with all disabilities, but I know personally for people who are blind, is the misconceptions. I had several doors, not slammed in my face physically, but emotionally.
These days, as Public Policy and Advocacy Manager for the National Industries for the Blind, you'll find Tony Stevens knocking on the doors on Capitol Hill.
Tony and his guide dog navigate a sidewalk near the White House.
Yes, it's a natural fit for Tony, but hardly the only job he is fit for, according to his boss.
Rick Webster, Vice President, Public Policy, National Industries for the Blind.
He is very self-motivated. He's very productive. There's nothing that he can't do in the legislative and regulatory arena in terms of research, in terms of writing, communicating with people, advocating before Congress. He's terrific at his job. Tony could be doing this work on behalf of any interest group, any constituency organization that's going to Capitol Hill.
A dozen disability advocates, including Tony, meet around a large conference table.
And what we try to do is bring in other people who are blind who work at our nonprofits around the country, who have had similar experiences, who have had similar people tell them, you can't do this. It helps when we, as people who are visually impaired, are able to be able to say ourselves, we can do this. And that the misconceptions are just that, misconceptions.
Tony and his guide dog access the metro and board a subway. A young woman who is blind walks with her guide dog, the start of her commute to the Department of Labor. Tiffany Jolliffe, Program Specialist, U.S. Department of Labor, Office of Disability Employment Policy.
I think that people who are blind, they aren't given the opportunity to really shine and show off their skill sets that they may have developed.
For Tiffany Jolliffe, an internship at a disability lab allowed her to develop an understanding of providing accessible web content that opened doors at the Department of Labor, first with another internship, and eventually with a post-college job in the Office of Disability Employment Policy.
Tiffany arrives at the Office of Disability Employment Policy.
I was so anxious to get her back here. I couldn't wait for an opening on my team.
Colette Mitchell, Policy Advisor Team Lead, U.S. Department of Labor.
We have an expedited hiring process, which is wonderful for people with disabilities, but it does not mean that you do not have to have the skills or qualifications. Tiffany's resume went up to our HR department. She clearly had the skills and qualifications and was the best qualified for the opening.
Tiffany uses headphones to listen to her emails, then types responses.
She has produced two blogs. She's working on our federal hiring initiative.
Posters promoting hiring of persons with disabilities line the area.
She's been a real value add to the entire team, and she's the only millennial on our team.
One thing that I really work on is with the workforce recruitment program. I'm the employer team liaison to that. It's a federal program that creates a database of qualified students and recent graduates with disabilities who are looking for either federal or private sector employment.
Tiffany and her guide dog head to a meeting in the assistant secretary's office.
In order to be, like, to be asked to be a liaison to that program is really fun for me because I get to see it from the other side and I get to p- potentially help someone else who was in my position find their road to employment.
Tiffany and her guide dog navigate the plaza outside the Department of Labor building. A man with profound low vision and bilateral hearing impairment turns off lights in his home before departing for work. He commutes on the bus and the subway.
I'm going to school for my master's degree, for a combined master's degree between UMass Medical School and Suffolk University. And even the other day, I had somebody to me say, well, how are you going to write a paper?
Carl Richardson knows that the road to employment is rarely a straight path. Dealing with a progressive visual impairment and bilateral hearing loss takes creative thinking, strategy, and planning. Rather useful skills for the ADA coordinator at the Massachusetts State House, wouldn't you say?
Carl Richardson, ADA coordinator, Massachusetts State House.
I do have to constantly readjust, and even now have to readjust. My vision continually progressively gets worse, and I have to always be open-minded about changing how I do things to get the job done.
Messages. Tammy Krause. 4 minutes ago. Sure.
All right, good. We're covered.
Carl is shown accessing emails and messages on his iPhone using the built-in voiceover feature.
Before working with Carl Richardson, I hadn't had any experience working with anybody visually impaired.
Tammy Krause, Superintendent, Bureau of the State House.
We do a lot of projects in the building, and before, none of us had ever dealt with disabilities or none of us had disabilities. So now, as soon as we have a project that's starting, Carl's there from the beginning.
Carl and his guide dog walk the halls of the State House. He describes upcoming renovations to a public hearing space.
We'll have, not only will the stage be accessible, but we'll have the rostrum go up and down for people in wheelchairs so that height can be adjusted.
In the design of Gardner Auditorium, I mean, Carl sees it in a different way than any of us would. So he's able to tell us what a visually impaired person would need. He's able to help tell us what somebody in a wheelchair would need that we wouldn't think about.
Carl used a video magnifier with color contrast to read letters and printed documents. Carl and his guide dog crossed the mosaic floor of the State House Rotunda.
I get a tremendous amount of satisfaction. I mean, not only does anybody get self-worth from getting up and getting going to work, but because of the uniqueness of my job in that I help other people with disabilities have access to government services, the legislature, the governor's office, it's an amazing thing.
It is amazing what an opportunity can provide and how people can rise to the challenge.
Carl and his guide dog climb the steps outside the State House. A woman who is blind meets in a co-worker's office, her guide dog at her feet. Rebecca Bridges, Human Capital Consultant, Federal Management Partners.
When someone tells you that you can't do something, I think, you know, your initial reaction might be to sort of question yourself. But, you know, you dig deep and figure out that, you know, maybe the other reaction is, I'm going to go do it anyway. And I've always been a little bit feisty and stubborn.
Rebecca and her guide dog descend the steps in front of her house on the way to work.
Feisty and stubborn weren't the qualities that attracted the attention of Federal Management Partners, where Rebecca Bridges works as a management consultant.
Rebecca walks the halls of her office.
I do think her application stood out. She had some experience that was very relevant. We had Rebecca go through the same interview process that every other candidate would go through.
Erin Patera, President, Federal Management Partners.
I think did some accommodations on her writing assessment where she brought in her own computer and was fully able to do her writing assessment that we ask all candidates to do.
At her desk, Rebecca listens to emails and types responses.
I think that you have natural apprehensions when you haven't worked with someone that's blind, and I think those, the apprehensions that we had was just making sure we communicated with our workforce, that they were educated on things that Rebecca may need, and one of the best things about Rebecca was she helped us do that.
Well, when I got hired here, I do feel like, you know, again, there was a genuine curiosity about how I did things. I actually voluntarily put on a couple of lunch events. I made it fun. I didn't really make it about me, but I made it about you know, people who are blind.
In a restaurant, Rebecca shares lunch with a coworker.
You know, one of the things, you know, when they brought me in to offer me the job, they said, you know, what kind of technology do you need? And, you know, they've been wonderful about making sure I had the accommodations.
Any of those technology things, I think, have been under $1,000. Some of them spread out, so they've been very reasonable for what we do. She's improved a lot of our products at FMP, so we are often work with the federal government. We need to make sure anything that we submit is accessible. Any kind of electronic products are accessible. We're maybe designing a website for them. It needs to make sure it's accessible. She's a perfect subject matter expert there that we can do testing and make sure everything we're designing really works. And we've actually kind of, I would say that's become a bit of a strength area for FMP, and a lot of it is things that she's brought to us.
You can measure the contributions to the business, but there is something greater when opportunity is provided.
Rebecca and her guide dog exit a meeting and head to her desk.
I feel good about myself because I'm getting up, going to work, doing something. And I also feel good about myself because I know I'm making a difference in other people's lives. So it's like paying it forward.
Carl boards a bus on his way home.
As hokey as it sounds, I want to be able to give them hope that, yes, you really can do it. And so when I come to work every day, I feel like I'm perpetuating that and helping other people understand that, you know, this is possible. This is doable. You can get a job.
Tiffany and her guide dog walk past storefronts on their way to a metro station.
I have a job that I enjoy. I have a family that I love dearly. I have a beautiful house. I'm so happy that I'm able to support my family and contribute and pay taxes and, you know, those kinds of things. But I feel like that should be the norm.
Rebecca is shown at home prior to her workday. She rocks her son, who sits in a baby carrier on the dining room table. The boy looks at the camera and smiles broadly.
You love laboring for it. You love getting up in the morning and trying to get kids dressed two or three attempts. You love trying to feed him. You love walking him to school.
Tony is shown feeding one of his two young sons. They then begin a walk to school and daycare before Tony heads to work.
You love going to work and helping people have similar experiences in their life. So, I mean, my life is very fulfilling. And, I mean, it's ironic when you think about it that the real blindness is the people perceiving people who are blind. That's the blindness.
For more information about the American Council of the Blind, please visit acb.org.
This video was made possible through the generosity of J.P. Morgan Chase & Company.
Yeah, quite a video, isn't it?
Yeah, no, that's really...
Isn't it great?
And that's, as I said, that is a tool for all of us in our states that we can use. You can access it, excuse me, two different ways. You can go on the acb.org website, /blindability, www.acb.org/blindability, or you can do it through YouTube, going on to the American Council of the Blind YouTube page. So, you know, we encourage you to access it, to play it, to use it. I think it, you know, you can see how powerful it is. I don't need to say really much about it. It says what it needs to say, and I think it's really impactful by demonstrating not just that they're there in the office, but that the family situations, the rest of it. I think it really covers the ground. So with that, I want to thank you for giving me I do have to mention one side point, if I might. Since Glenn brought up apparel and my apparel, I do want to say that notwithstanding the disaster of this year, a couple weeks ago I proudly wore my 49er tie.
Thank you very much. I think we need to add to our business meeting agenda this afternoon to throw him out of our organization because he is a paid member. So while Sue's employment panel people are making their way up to the front here, the ones that haven't done it already, we'll have one quick door prize, and then we'll get started with our employment panel this morning.
Okay.
So we have, it is a gift bag, and it has a coffee cup. There is a green tea lotion and Lady Stetson perfume. Ooh. And $10. And that's from South Kitsap. That goes to Red George.
Reg, are you here?
Reg, are you here? No. Lisa will like it. And can someone come by this table to run that to Reg?
Come on over.
Thank you.
Is Betty in the room? Oh, okay. Kathy, come on over, Kathy. Steve's coming to get you. Okay, so.
Have to do one more?
No, I'm going to introduce
you. Okay,
but
gotcha.
Then by the time I get done, they'll be here. So, as I said earlier, this to me was one of our better parts of our program, and the second part here this morning is our employment panel, which we do every year, where we pick three interesting people who are doing jobs that maybe other people didn't realize blind people could actually do these jobs, and it's always very interesting to hear these people speak and tell us about their job, and of course, we always have our great facilitator of this panel that's been doing it for
how many years now?
15 years now, Sue Amater. And so I'm going to turn the mic over to Sue and let her introduce her panel, and we'll do the program.
Good morning, WCB. Everybody having a good time? All right. Good morning, ACB Radio. We got some listeners out there, Deb? Rick? Great. All right. Well, that video was a great segue to our panel this morning. And as Glenn said, we've been doing this for 15 years. Throughout the kind of the 80s and 90s, periodically, we would put together a panel of maybe a couple people with different jobs. Well, then at our Wenatchee convention in 2001, I begged, pleaded, then President Burl Cawley, I said, I think we should do an employment panel every year. He said, I don't know, you know, if you can get people year after year. So the other day when we just had registered, my husband John said, how do you find people? I said, oh, man, I listen all year long. One of the panelists up here, I had breakfast. Just put it on the table. I had breakfast with him last year, and I thought, I'm going to tap him for next year. And then people tell me about people, and so you just never know when I might come tapping on your shoulder around September or October. Anyway, I love this panel, so we want to get right to it. We have three people here today, Yong Choi, Betty Sikkema, and Kathy Wilson. And I'm going to let each of them tell you what their job titles are, because I might butcher it. And they all do varied kinds of jobs, and they have a story to tell. I've asked them to talk to you about what their job is, how they got their job, what accommodations they need, and if they have any advice for you about looking for jobs or in the area of employment. So, you've heard enough from me, and there will be time for questions, rest assured, after we're done. So, without further ado, I want to introduce our first panel member. Yong Choi is going to talk to us. He works at Amazon.com, but I'll let him explain what he does. So help me welcome Yong Choi.
Good morning. I can sit here. Yeah. So I had three careers in my life, not just one. First, I started with piano. Second, I did a VP vendor. And now I'm a software engineer. My job now is Kindle accessibility quality assurance engineer. So I test, I train, and I give them example, and I give them what not to do, and I show them, I yell at them sometimes. I bribe them, and sometimes beer works pretty fast. But usually, sometimes I have to say, do I need to call legal department to? So, I mean, you have to do a lot of different things. Kindle has like 50 teams that makes different features. Yeah, with Amazon Prime, you can read books and listen to music, video and audiobooks, and run like apps like Skype. That device was a paper holder when I went to Amazon 3 years ago, but now it's usable. I can use it. I can, you know, I mean, I know it's that we are still improving, but, you know, that is our state. I mean, I cannot really say too much about the Kindle too much because this is nothing to, this is not really related, but, you know, you can ask me different questions, I can tell you later. So I use a Braille device for reading codes, and I use JAWS. I use Linux Box, different speech program, and also I use different tablets to test. I was poor. I didn't have a Braille device, and I had to depend on speech a lot of times to study my computer. And I had to find free books and stuff. I migrate. First, my eye condition is like called scleral cornea. That's cloudy cornea. I had a usable vision. You could see color, shape, and stuff. But like 3 years ago, I lost it all. So I mean, it never had any. I couldn't read large print. So I was always depending on my ability to like listen to or read Braille to get my job done. So eyes didn't help. Then I migrated to America in 1988. So I started playing piano when I was like 14. So I was thinking, yeah, I'm going to practice hard. And I'm going to get a master and doctorate. And I'm going to teach piano in college. Well, life doesn't turn out as you plan. So I majored in piano. So going on to grad school, well, I met a lady and got married. I had to get a real job. computer was my hobby. So, okay, I mean, let's say I start teaching and writing JavaScript. And but, you know, I got an opportunity to have a tech school for a year. So, I mean, I took that opportunity. I had an internship at NASA, and my boss liked me, so they hired me. So I worked there for like 3 years. And, of course, that there was problem, and my project got closed. I got laid up. And .com burst, there were too many programmers in Orlando. One company, like, fired, like, 1,000 programmers out of 3,000 workforce there. So I had no way to get jobs, so I mean, but, you know, even getting NASA's job was not easy. Like, I turned in, like, 50 resumes. I only got 2 replies. And when I did a phone interview and said everything was okay, when I showed up, oh, you're blind? No, they didn't say it. But, you know, they asked stupid questions, and for business, we can hire you. Yeah, what's the business reason? I wanted to ask, but I couldn't. So I went to VP program. I ran cafeteria, and I had a good opportunity to work with a Gulf Coast Enterprise that they run the military service, and like serving like 4,000 people, and all the recipe card is portioned for 100 people. Portion, like a 50-gallon a spaghetti pot I'd never seen before. And there is a walking oven that you can walk in and you can actually cook somebody if you. And later, my boss met Kirk Adams at the Lighthouse in the conference, and they were looking for IT guy. Oh, I have someone, and you know, he doesn't fit in my environment. No, he didn't say it, but, you know, he liked me, and he knew that I worked for computer because I did training courses and stuff for them, too. So I came to Lighthouse, and I worked in... How many people work at the Lighthouse here? See? So I work with Kuma Machine and wrote JavaScript and SharePoint and different things, and always chasing to fixing issues. And there was a contract position open at Amazon. So from permanent to contract is taking a risk, because contract, you never know when you're going to get fired. And my contract position lasted about 11 months. 9 months plus 2 months extension, then they have to decide whether they're going to hire me or they're going to fire me. So I got an interview. It lasted like 5 hours with like the different panels, and they asked me everything. They grill you, literally. So the appointment to let me know whether nay or yay was like at 2 o'clock on my last day. So I thought, oh, at least I got an appointment with the HR guy, so I might have gotten hired. Well, it's not true, actually. He said any contractor on site I just meet in person and tell them you are not hired. So so it was a big risk. Then, well, unfortunately, I was lucky I got hired. So this is my advice. Don't ever give up. If you want something, keep it up and do it until you get it. Nobody says, you know, you gotta get this until whenever. There's no time limit. Some people are slow, some people are fast. And keep knocking the door and keep studying and get ready and wait for the opportunity and get a mentorship. There are many people who work in the field that you want to work. And there are many resources, ACP sites, AFB mentorship. Equal opportunity doesn't mean that, that they give you everything. Equal opportunity means that you take a risk and ready to fail. And they give you opportunity to fail, yeah. So don't fear for rejection, really. It's part of life. My motto is work hard, party hard, and live hard. So, if you guys have any question, call me or email me, or just buy me beer in the hospital room, and I will answer your question. Thank you.
Thank you. Terrific advice. So, there'll be some beer and hospitality tonight. So. I know who we'll see down there. Okay, our next presenter is somebody that I've known for quite a long time. She's been active in her chapter, and she's been a chapter president. Excuse me. And I was really delighted when I heard about her new employment opportunity. So I next want us to welcome Betty Sikkema.
Hey.
Okay, right here. Here's the podium. Oh. The mic. Feel the mic up here.
What's going up there?
Yeah. All right.
Can everybody hear me?
We can. Yeah.
Good. Just a sec. Okay. As you know, my name is Betty Sikkema, and I got Bathurst next to me, my companion, that I've had for 2 years. And I got my job last December. I never in my dreams thought I would start working again at age 62. Usually people are thinking of retiring, but I got my job through DSB. And it was also... And the Lord has also put the two of us in our path.
That's right.
Yes. And both of us are so thankful that this happened. Jennifer Richmond told me about this gal that I'm working for. She's a young lady, and I work with her in her home, and I am a licensed caregiver. And what I do is, let me back up a little. This lady became blind because she was in an automobile accident, and she not only is she blind, she also has short-term memory loss, so I have to deal with that. And the thing is, I had worked in a nursing home for 1 year for 12 years, and one place for 12 years in Michigan and 3 years here in Washington. So I've had 15 years of experience with working with memory loss because I worked with dementia people. Besides that, my mom also has dementia, so I'm... with anybody having a short-term memory loss from a car accident is different, though. What I do is I help her with her housework. We work on it together. I put her to a task, and she can do it wonderfully. I also help her with her iPhone, and that's the adaptive equipment that I got, one of the things I got. We text each other when we're sitting in the same room, just so that she gets use of her iPhone, and I do other stuff with it too. What else do I do?
Explain how you got what your training was and the testing.
Oh, so I had to have 72 hours of training. Because I get paid by DSHS, and even though this lady's my employer. So I had to take the class, and I learned everything that you need to learn how to be a caregiver, which didn't really have anything to do with my job, but I learned how to transfer. I learned how to... dress people and anything I needed to learn to help somebody that can't do anything for themselves. And I had to take the test to become licensed, so I did that. And I am totally blind. I just have light perception. And the lady that I work for, she can see a really, really tiny bit. And she's a very pleasant person. We can joke around. We do a lot of joking around, too. And I enjoy my job so much. There's not a day where I think, oh, man, I got to go to work today. And, I did have a problem because she... lives outside of Linden. I live in Linden, Washington. I could not get specialized transportation or regular bus over there, so I thought, oh, man, I just can't say no to this job because I knew in my heart that she needed this. She needed me. She absolutely did because... So I thought, I can get drivers. So I got drivers. People from my church are driving me back and forth to work. And yeah. And I must say I can see improvements with her since December and now. Once we do something the same thing in the same order, she remembers that. Like I can come in and she'll say, I'll start the coffee. And even like a few weeks ago, I would say, okay, what's the first thing we do? And then she'll say, well, we'll do it. And then, but now she'll just walk in. I mean, when I walk in the door, I don't even have to say, what are we going to do now? What are we going to do first? And it's just so much fun. And I really thank Jennifer for helping me with this. And Jennifer works for DSB, and she is a mobility instructor. Did I get that right? Yeah. And a rehab counselor? No? Teacher? Yeah. That's right. She worked with me with mobility, yes. what happened was, is that I was going to work for someone else, actually. And he says to me, why don't you just apply for DSB and maybe they can get you stuff that you need. So, okay, so I applied for DSB. And one day Jennifer comes to my house, and she goes, I need to talk to you. And she wasn't for sure if I was going to want this or not. But anyway, so she told me about this lady without saying her name and stuff. And I thought, wow, I can't believe this, you know. And so then she says, are you interested? And I said, I think you've got the right person. And so she says, well, okay, I'll talk to the family. And so last October, we went over there. She introduced me to this lady and her husband. And, you know, I didn't even have to give him a print resume. I just told him about myself and what I'd done in the past and all that. And, well, that was it. I was hired. This was the easiest job I ever applied for. And the easiest job I ever worked for. And they are just wonderful people. I mean, very easygoing and, yeah. So do I have any advice? I think Young said a lot. Yeah, if you're looking for a job, just keep at it. You know, someday the right person will come. And to those who have just lost your sight, you know, it's not the end of the world, and you can do a lot of things. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Betty. I bet that woman is very lucky to have you as her caregiver, and this is kind of how Betty approaches life. With a positive attitude and a great spirit. So, okay. So, our third presenter is Kathy Wilson. Kathy also has a very interesting story to tell us about her life and what she's done. So, please help me welcome Kathy to the podium.
Right here, Kathy. There you go. The mic.
There you go.
Feel the mic. Yeah, do I have to? Oh, there you go. Oh, okay. Okay. Hello. I'm Kathy Wilson, and I'm currently working at the Lighthouse for the Blind as an HR representative for the Bay Supply Center. I started my journey. I was an accounting manager. That was my career. And then my vision began to go. I lost my vision in my left eye in 1990 and started gradually losing it in my right eye from then on. 2012, 2011, my vision in my right eye really went bad. And at this time, I wasn't blind, okay? So I'm doing my job. I can see good out of my right eye, and so I didn't consider myself a blind person, although I went online and bought a cane. Because I kept falling off of curbs. And I said, why? Because the curbs were blending. And, you're in Kmart, those big old white poles, I was just banging right into them. I was like, what's wrong with me? So I... Oh, I'm sorry. Is that better?
Yeah. Put it right up to your mouth.
Oh, really? Yeah, okay, now. Now, okay. So I got hold of DSB and... September of 2011, and Linda Wilder was my counselor, and I, yay! And I called her from the unemployment office. They said, here, call DSB. I didn't even know what DSB was, so I called, and I talked to Linda Wilder, and I told her my name and, you know, what I do, and she said, so are you blind? I said, well, no, I'm not blind. I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't know. And I go, well, I'm not blind, but I did go online, and I bought a cane. She said, wait a minute, you're not blind, and you bought a cane. She said, girl, you need to come see me as soon as you can. So that's actually when I start thinking, well, maybe there's really, you know, I just thought you suffer through, and this is what you do. You just make it work. So after I got with Linda DSV, I went on my job journey. And one of the best things she did for me was she got me a job developer. Because I was so skittish, and you know, I go to interview, how am I going to tell these, you know, what are they going to say? They're going to look at me funny. I was still caught up in myself because it was all new to me, and I didn't know how to adjust to this process. And she got me a job developer, and I would put my applications in, and then after I put them in and I got interviewed, they called me for an interview. I called my job developer, and she called before me and let them know so that I would have my accommodations and everything. And that really lightened. Then I began to grow and say, oh, it's really not that big of a deal. You know, deal with it and go along with it. So after I did that, I ended up getting a job at the Lighthouse for the Blind, working with at the Base Supply Center on Norfolk. That's where I started. I started with the internship, and I was in purchasing. I was a special order buyer there for a year and a half. And I worked there, and I loved that. People and the customers, it was just a wonderful experience. And for me, the internship was a wonderful opportunity because I was still kind of skittish about, you know, what am I going to need? What do I need to get my job done? But in that internship, I was 6 months, and by the end of that, I found me back. Your brain is here. Your abilities are here. There's nothing wrong with you. You just need a little bit of help to see what you need to do. But all the other operations were in place. It was a very, very good experience for me. And then in July, I got promoted to the HR department at the Lakewood office, administration office in Lakewood. And my position there now is to hire people that are blind and visually impaired. We want to fill these positions. That's our mission at the Lighthouse for the Blind. And so I want to recruit and find people to fill positions and give them the same opportunity that I had to get your freedom back and know who you are. Yes, we might lose our vision, but we still are the same people we were before. We didn't change, and it's just a little bit of vision loss. And at the time, I used Zoom text, but now I'm officially a JAWS user because I needed, and I love JAWS. I learned JAWS. Al Yardley trained me, and that's what I'm doing now. Yeah. I use my Pebble and my CCTV, and I do have some vision in my right eye. It's not very dependable, so I really try to kind of turn my monitor off and listen to JAWS. I'm trying to train my ears now. And stop really trying to use my vision.
Did you go to the OTC?
I can't forget the OTC. That's the first thing Linda did was sent me to the OTC, and I was just like a kid in a candy store. I was so hungry, and I'd never seen so many blind people in one place. I was like, wow, you know, how do they do? You know, I was just like, really? And I went there because I stopped driving in 97. I'd never been on public transportation since 1997. Somebody took me. I was so blessed. I had friends, and I had just a great community. And so they took me everywhere I went, to work, to church, grocery store. They did everything for me. I was kind of spoiled. So when I got to the OTC, I was at that point, well, wait a minute. I want to be able to move around. I want to be able to do this, and I want to be able to do that. And so my main focus was mobility, try to be on my own. And then I learned Braille. I fell in love with Braille at the OTC. I just loved it. I loved Braille. Yep, Braille is. I'm 100% Braille person. And I had better vision than I do now. But what I did do when I was there is I did all my mobility under blindfolds. Because, thank God, because, you know, my vision wasn't really stable. And I wanted to still get the full experience, and then as my vision began to go, I didn't feel like a lost puppy because I did my training with blind shades. So OTC people, I have to say, when you go there, you know, you get all that you can get. And my seminar was, when I first got there, it's like you're going camping. And I took my tent, and you know those stakes you put in the ground? You dig them in deep because you're going to be there for a while. But as I begin to grow and get my skills and my confidence, I begin to loosen up those stakes. Because now I'm getting ready. I'm getting ready to go out and do what they trained me to do. So that's my advice to you guys on that. Enjoy every minute of it. Get all you can get. And you're just camp out. You're not living there. It's not forever. You're walking through. And it's there because, you know, you get this. I got this feeling of didn't want to go. I was like, oh, I just love this camaraderie, and it was just wonderful. But that's good. We can enjoy that. But then get your skills, get what you need to do, and then pack up that tent, and then you're out in the world, and they're ready for you. Did I forget something?
All right.
No, is that good? Wonderful. Okay. Thank you.
Do they have a mic on that?
Yeah, they've got table mics.
Okay. All right. Do you love that enthusiasm or what? Okay. Well, we have time for questions. Remember, if you have a question, raise your hand. Wait till the microphone comes to you. And then say your name and where you're... Ooh. What's the matter, Frank? Hold on, you guys. I don't know what they're doing. Okay. Okay. All right.
Okay. It's Danette.
Danette,
this was
go ahead.
A wonderful panel. Thank you. And Kathy's seminar speech, I was there. And one of the new students, his comment was, my tent is still in my backpack. It's not set up yet because I'm just beginning. So I haven't had time to set it up yet.
Okay. Do you have a question, Danette?
I just wanted to say that was a good panel. Thank you.
Thank you. Can you guys hear me on this mic? It's
yeah.
Okay. All right. All right. Who has the next question?
This is Holly Turry.
Holly?
Hi, Sue. Hi. What a great panel. I really enjoyed it. My question is for you, Betty. Tell them about taking the test and tell them about how you got to class and stuff. This girl is my hero. She works so hard. Anyway, go, Betty.
Okay. Betty?
There's a mic on your table.
Yeah, I know. I got my. I'm thinking.
Okay.
Sorry.
How I took my test. I had to take it orally. Yeah, I must tell you this. So I come to, you know, they let me know that I can take this test, and I found out the day before because I went through my mail, and I thought, I was scanning my mail, I thought, oops, I got to take that test tomorrow. Ooh, I got to arrange things differently now, you know. And so I went over there and signed in and all that, and they said, are you Alberta Sikama? That's my real name, Alberta. Yes. And do you need special accommodations? I said yes, and I filled out the paperwork, and I sent to the wait, and are you not ready? Because I am going to take the test today. I am not going home. I said, I don't know what you're going to have to do, but I am not going home.
Did they provide you a reader, or how?
So they had to call the ProMetric up, you know, the people that, you know, do this test and all that. And she says, well, what do you need? I said, I need somebody to read the test and I need somebody to record the answers for me. So the computer read the test for me, and they said that the lady that was giving the test to everybody, she could record my answers. So I had 50 questions I had to answer, and then I also had to do, I forget what you call that. Oh, the practical, yeah. So I had to show how I could brush false teeth. And also clean and all that. So, yeah, I did take the test the day I was supposed to because I was not going to come back.
Good. All right. Next question.
My name is Donald Causer, and I have a comment. First and foremost, thank you, Sue, and the panel. And this is for Betty. I'm kind of in the same boat, and I'm actually the person that's getting the care. My caregiver, Terry, right here, he went through the state test and had to do the thing for DSHS, too. And The first time he came back and he missed two questions on the practical. He was really bummed out. And, you know, he kind of did the fly by night, you know, not practicing until the night before the test.
Oh, dear.
Well,
Donald, do you have a question?
Yeah, what's the question?
No, I'm sorry. Okay. I just had a comment. I just was so touched by everybody that talked, and I just want to thank you guys so much.
Thank you, Donald.
I just want to tell you, Terry is a great person.
For sure. Okay. I just know we have a lot of questions out there, so.
Cindy Van Winkle.
Cindy.
Yes, Kathy, and all of you were wonderful. Kathy, you are now hiring for those base jobs. How many jobs are out there? What kind of jobs are out there? So that's what I'd like to know.
We were always looking for people that are visually impaired. Right now on the North Fort base store, can you guys hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
I'm looking for a clerk. It's a clerk, too. And basically, the store, we sell office supplies and mission essential items to the military. So they would be a cashier, customer service, stock shelves probably, facing inventory, things like that. And then we do have a special order buyer position, which is doing purchasing, which is kind of what I did. It's exactly what I did. And we're always looking, and, you know, it's almost like if we can find some people, maybe we can find somewhere to put them, you know? If we can get some people that are available to work. We're thinking about opening up maybe another place on base. So I'm thinking, you know, so a couple, two or three clerks and a special order buyer.
So they should contact you. Is that right, Kathy?
Yes.
Okay, so.
Yes.
So if somebody is interested, Kathy, you're here all weekend, right? People could find you?
Yes, I'm here, and you can always just call the Lighthouse for the Blind and talk to Kevin Daniel also if you guys need to get hold of me. I don't have my business cards here today, but I'm in the Lakewood admin office.
Okay.
Sue?
Yes.
Hi, this is Melissa Hudson, and I just had a quick comment to make to Betty. I just want to say that, you know, your positive attitude and image that you have of yourself and to the person that's caring for you, I admire you for having that kind of an attitude and for just sticking with it. So thank you very much.
Well, thank you for that comment. When I was finished with nursing home work, I thought I'd never get into the medical field again, and here I am again.
Good.
But yeah, good. Like I said, I really enjoy it. And, you know, I forgot to mention... also, my counselor from DSB, she also helped with this, too. So I want to give her credit, too, and I can't think of her name right now.
Sheila,
yeah, thank you.
Sheila Burkett-Lucky.
Sheila, yes, Sheila Burkett-Lucky.
All right. Other questions?
Yes, this is John McConnell from Pierce County Association of the Blind. The question I have is for Young Choi. Two questions. Is Amazon hiring, Amazon.com hiring, and how long would it take to learn scripting?
Learning JavaScript is depending on the person, patient you are. It's nothing to do with how smart you are, because I always say it depends on how long you can sit down in one place and learn. You have to have a heavy hip, not a smart brain, to learn those things. And for Amazon, the hiring depends on the hiring manager and the work schedule. So, you know, you just contact me privately, and I will figure it out if there's any place for anyone to work. So,
is Amazon hiring right now? Do you know?
Not now. I mean, that they hire different positions, not specifically related to accessibility. So,
okay. Just keep your kind of ears open and see what happens. Right.
Yep.
All right.
Hi, Betty. This is Haley, and had I known that...
You need to be on a mic, Haley.
It is? It's on? Can you hear me?
Closer.
No, you need to get...
Closer?
No.
I feel like I'm eating the microphone.
Well, you have to. You have to practically eat it.
Yes. Had I known this about you, Betty, and I've sat with you at every meal, I would have been hounding you already. But so I have a degree as an occupational therapist, and my full-time job right now is mom, and that's where I love to be, but I would like to venture out. So my question is, how many hours are you working with this person in a week? And what were some of the challenges of being blind and going into somebody else's house? My own house, pretty darn amazing. And I'm the chef and the house cleaner and the dog picker-upper and everything, right? The laundry, the maid. But going to someone else's house is a completely different thing to orient yourself to that house and get comfortable so that you can assist that person. So I wondered what the challenges for you were in that department.
Does that make sense? Yeah, it makes sense. Well, it doesn't take me very long to learn a house, for one thing. And her house isn't very big. It's all on one floor. And yes, and you're right. I do help her with her laundry also. Some of the cupboards that she has, they are labeled, but I never look at them. There's Braille labels on them for her, too, you know, so she knows where things are. And, you know, it took a little bit, like, especially in the kitchen, to know where the dishes were and all that, you know. But I have learned that, and, well, if...
And how many hours a week do you work?
Oh, that's right. That was your first question. I knew you had another one. I work 20 hours a week. I work 3 days, 6 hours. And on Fridays, I work 2. So I'm allowed 81 hours a month. So on Monday, I work Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday, and I work from 11 to 5. And those are really great hours because in the morning, I can still get stuff done around my place. And if I want to, I can walk to the bank yet before work. And yeah, I love starting at 11 o'clock. And then on Fridays, I work from 10 to 12.
Okay. Okay, just raise your hand.
I have one, and I have a mic.
Just okay.
It's Danette. This is for Kathy.
Danette, did you already ask a question?
I had a comment, yeah, but okay, I won't do it.
Well, okay. If there's time, okay?
Yes. Okay, this is Kevin Daniel. Let me just say nice job on all three of your parts. For any open position that Kathy mentioned, we encourage all of you to go to the Lighthouse website. It's seattlelighthouse.org. On the left side, there is a employment opportunities column. And you can look at all the open positions, including the clerk position and the buyer, which Kathy came from. And we have a lot of open positions, so we just encourage all of you to go to the Lighthouse. If you need to get a hold of Kathy, you can get a hold of me, and I will get you in contact with Kathy for any position at our Base Supply Center stores. Thank you.
Thank you, Kevin. Anybody else? Okay, Danette, I guess I should have... Sorry about that. Oh.
Thank you.
Kevin covered what you wanted to?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Anybody else?
I do have a question. This is Mika.
Mika.
So I just was wondering if the jobs at the base, if they are accessible and if there are accommodations for totally blind people.
I'm working on that, Mika.
So, I am. So this is Kevin again. We have been working on, and this is prior to Kathy coming, one of the things, by the way, we have 8 Base Supply Center stores across the Northwest and San Diego. And the one thing that's been a little tricky for us is making sure that every single job at the Base Supply Center store is accessible for any blind person. And some of our struggles is working with the military and some of their proprietary information. But know that we have a staff dedicated to making sure that the work continues to have everything fully accessible, and we want it as bad as all of you do, because it's the best way for the Lighthouse to continue to meet its mission. So we'll continue to work on that. But the mere fact that Kathy was hired as the first blind buyer ever by the Lighthouse for the Blind is evidence of our direction. 2 years ago, they wouldn't have even considered hiring Kathy. Now she's already been promoted. So stand by, guys. We're continuing to work on that.
Thank you. Okay, we have time for a couple more questions if anybody has any.
Don't see any hands.
Hey, Mika, do you have a door prize for this panel, maybe? Can I do that?
Ooh, there it is. I do. I have...
Is that all right, Glenn?
$25 from the Capital City Council of the Blind.
All right. Okay.
May Valentine.
Don't hear anybody yelling.
All right.
I'm here.
Daryl Roberts.
Oh, is Daryl here?
Oh, he's not here?
Oh, Daryl.
All right. Okay. Oh, my goodness. Chris Brame.
Oh. Is Chris here?
All right.
Is he here?
Yes.
Yes, he's here.
Well, guys, this was our 15th panel, and it was an awesome panel. Please help me in thanking our panel for taking their time to share their lives with you. Thank you so much. See you next year.
Thanks, Sue. Well, let's give Sue a round for the panel. I mean, she always... I think this is the first year where I've actually known the whole panel, because I know Betty through our association here at the council, and Young used to work at the Lighthouse, and I met him there, and Kathy and I have the same boss, and I talk to her on the phone practically every day, and email, and all these things, and so, you know, I remember when Kathy first came for one of her first interviews at the Lighthouse. It's a little different when you come to the Lighthouse as a blind person for an interview. You know, blind people, when you go out to a employer who maybe doesn't get the blindness thing, you spend a lot of time trying to justify your blindness and how it's not going to be a deterrent to your job. And when Kathy came in, she was a little bit that way in the beginning, but after about 5 minutes with me and my boss, I think she figured out real fast, I don't have to prove myself here. These guys get it already. And then she could just talk about her job skills, and it was a, you know, productive interview. We're actually a couple of minutes ahead of schedule, so I could either send you away to break right now, or we could have a couple more door prizes and then do the break. You got a couple more over there, Mika?
Oh, we can do one more.
One more, she says, for now, and then we'll go to break, and after break, Galen's going to be your facilitator, so I'll just say thank you for indulging me this morning, and we'll let Mika do the door prize, and you can go to break.
Okay. We have a gift bag with $10, and it's a goodie bag, so all kinds of treats and stuff from South Kitsap. Oh, yeah. Jacob Kamaunu.
Not here.
Okay. Kevin Daniel. His loss is your gain, right?
Hey, we're going to be back at 10:40, folks. And Tim McCorkle, if you're in the room, Eric Hunter would love to see you down here in the front row in front of the podium. And Tracy Feggi, if you're here also, Eric Hunter would love to see you down here in the front row. Huh?
Thank you.
Oh, I never saw her even.
Hi, Young. Hi, Sue.
Hi.
Young's already.
Yeah,
Young's so already gone.
Something, John.
Are we ready for a door prize?
There you go.
Okay. All right, you got to listen to get your name called. Do your name. We have a $25 gift card to Starbucks, donated by Glenn and Ursula McCulley.
Say Kathy.
And we have Megumi Tanaka. Are you here? Okay. All right. Thank you.
It's your messenger bag? Yeah. Yeah, they're going to auction it off. Oh, that's not yours, huh?
Hey, stranger.
Oh. Do we have everyone up here, all our panelists? Okay. We'll give it a minute. I am Galen Floy. I saw on the program that I am facilitating the Big Three, and I made me think that I needed a cape or something. And unfortunately, I felt like I drank some kryptonite last night. But it is my pleasure to introduce these three panelists. If we can have some quiet in the back there, thank you. When you first become part of a consumer organization, you're confronted with a lot of acronyms and initialisms and trying to figure out who's who. Well, we are very fortunate in this state to have people who are questions till all three have presented. We'll start with Superintendent Dean Stengem from the Washington State School for the Blind, followed by Luoma Durand, Director of Department of Services for the Blind, and last but not least, Danielle Miller, Program Manager and Librarian for the Washington Talking Book and Braille Library. So take it away, Dean.
Thank you very much, and thank you for once again having me here to tell you a little bit about the School for the Blind. And I got my watch up front, so my goal is that I'm going to be done at 11 o'clock, so I can make sure everybody else has time for the presentations. For those of you that may or may not know, for me this is kind of like a trip down memory lane, and basically as I do this, it's really all about partnerships. This is not only for me my 25th year as superintendent, but it's also, I believe, a very important 25th year for WCV. Isn't this the... So I just was thinking about different things, and I know, where's Sue Amateur? She's here someplace. There she is back, because she's the one that used to always do this. And I thought about 10, 11, 12 years ago is when that stop, because I am, for those that may or may not know, that I'm retiring on June 30th this year, so, oh, yeah, well, good, see? But anyway, about 11 years ago, I think, another person retired, and it was Jan with the library, Jan Ames, and Sue used to get such a kick out of introducing, and she'd say, and we're going to have Jan and Dean. So, I really enjoyed the panelists before, and I like the comment that Kathy Wilson made about the tent, because I always like to relate something. And I said, for me, my dad was a farmer. I grew up in North Dakota, and I never really felt that, whatever I did, I guess I've always been a farmer, because I thought my job in working with blind and visually impaired children, organizations throughout the country, staff members, is no different than a farmer, because what I've always done is tried to plant seeds, plant ideas, try to stimulate ideas, and I said, and then basically nurture those ideas and try to, I guess if you're a farmer, you say probably fertilize those ideas, help them grow, but. A lot of things have happened over the years, and it's been actually a wonderful, wonderful 25-plus years for me. As of June 30th, for myself, it'll be 42 years that I've been in the area of education of the blind. So, but my focus is back here in Washington, because I've been in three different states. I look back over the years and just a little bit of an update on the school, and And as we move forward, you know, things are in good shape. My goal between now and the end of the year, the governor's office is actually conducting a national search process right now. Hopefully they'll get some good candidates. And someone asked what was on my bucket list or what am I planning, and I said, well, right now my bucket list is to make sure that everything is in great shape so that whoever comes in after me on transition will have wonderful people to work with and things will be in place and programs will continue and hopefully we'll take things to a higher level. When I look back, when I started as superintendent, the major program at the school was the on-campus program. And we really tried to continue to improve that and make that a very, very strong program with intensified services for children where we could see major, major changes. We implemented 24-hour IEP processes because kids are in the cottage. Kids go home every weekend. We not only serve kids in Washington, but we serve kids in the state of Oregon. For you, you remember a number of years ago the Oregon School for the Blind closed. When that happened, we worked with people in the legislature in Oregon and also in their Department of Education, and we were written into the Oregon State Plan to provide a full continuum of services. And so we are serving kids from both states. Kids are in and out. They receive intensive services, and I think they get some very good services on campus. Other things that have happened, though, is in 1990 is when we really started a major push for major expansion and outreach services, contracted services, and we have itinerant teachers throughout the state. Actually, right now, we have more teachers that are employed through the outreach than on campus. So, as of last year, we had some major changes in some key leadership positions. Craig Metter, who is the outreach director and state vision consultant, had been a teacher and a principal at one time. He took a job with the American Printing House for the Blind as vice president. And that gave us an opportunity, and we hired Emily Coleman. Emily is a great teacher, and she's in a leadership program right now. We'll be completing that, I think, by December. She's also a parent of a blind child, and she is the new outreach director and also the state vision consultant. And Emily lives in the Spokane area, so she's based out of Spokane, and actually she has an office at the ESD in Spokane. So those services continue to diversify. Another area that we've, about a year ago, we worked with Department of Services Blind, Department of Early Learning, Department of Health, Healthcare Authority, OSPI, Washington Center for Disability Services. I'm probably missing someone. And that's trying to see if we could pull together a better way to really push the envelope and coordinate statewide early intervention services. And a person by the name of Diet Schneider was hired, and she has just done an amazing job and really getting some major, major changes occurring in early intervention. To give you an idea, and it doesn't mean this is the number of kids that were served, but 2 years ago there was 11 students that were counted on early intervention that received, that were basically counted through what's called the quota count or for materials for the American Printing House for the Blind. And we're hoping that number should be a little over 300 by the end of this year. So kids are coming out of the woodwork, and really some good services are really evolving, and some great partnerships are happening. Instructional Resource Center, Braille Access, Braille Production Center. Colleen Lyons retired June 30th this year. And Jennifer Fenton, she was here yesterday with a display. Jennifer Fenton is the new person in charge of the Ogden Resource Center. And so that program is going to continue to evolve and expand. And right now we also have 20 women with the women's prison that work with us and that are highly highly skilled. So that's in place. Professional development is an area that has just continued to explode. And that's we know we can't do this job by ourselves. We know that it takes really a lot of people to make sure that people are networked and have the right skills all over our state and the surrounding states. So we do a lot of professional development work. And when you look at actual seats and chairs at the school on professional development, we average about 300 people per year that we do professional development with. But we also do a lot of things online through online video clips on blindness, tips, access to curriculum, and there's over 50,000 people all over the world access that information from our website each year, and that's an area we want to continue to build on. Research development, another area that basically has been really active for the school, and we formed some great partnerships with a number of universities, and we're always concerned about access. We're really concerned about smarter balance, one of the national assessments that kids have to take. And is that accessible the way it needs to be? And is it on an even level playing field with sighted children? And we met this week again with OSPI. We're optimistic that things are going to get there. It's probably going to take another year. But I think we are moving on the right course. But the big difference there is that we're also going to have to get the legislature to step forward and fund the equipment that's necessary so that kids can access the exam in a computer-based environment. So that is another process that we're working on. Other aspects on research, we've been working for about 4 years now with a very bright computer scientist, Dr. Andy Stefik, who is now based out of University of Nevada, Las Vegas. He started out Central Washington, then Southern Illinois University of Nevada, Las Vegas. I'm hoping he ends up back in Washington, maybe at the University of Washington, doing some great stuff in regards to computer programming. And he's basically working in an area called Quorum, and very successful. So we're also training teachers from throughout the United States and Canada how to teach this computer programming for blind and visually impaired children. And we offer that on campus, and we also offer it online. And as of this year, we have also started a component on robotics on our campus. And, of course, kids are excited about that. Really excited about it. Also, accessible online learning. That's an area we've been pushing for years, and it really has almost felt like we're pushing a chain up a hill. You know, it's how do you get people to totally embrace this? This is where the world is at. Things are going to have to be that way. Kids need options. Every school district, every place does not offer a course the way it works best for a blind and visually impaired child, and what options do they have? And we think that we can make a significant difference. We focused on mathematics because we felt that was the area that kids were basically being, I don't want to say denied access, but they probably were not receiving information in a way that really made the most sense for them, especially with the changes in the way mathematics is taught being much more visual in nature from what probably it used to be. And so we've had some great success. So we're continuing to work with that and trying to form really a tight coalition of people from across the United States so that any place that there's a child that wants another option, they should be able to take that. And they should be able to take it when they want it and how they need it. And we've shared this information with school districts and say, if we can figure out how to do this with blind and visually impaired children, we should be able to do this with all children because everybody learns differently and giving them options. So I think there's great promise in that area, just more attention needs to be put to that. The other areas, we're going to continue. We're continuing to offer summer school programs and options for kids. That's happening. And every so often people ask, do we still run an outdoor school for blind and visually impaired children? It used to be called Camp Magruder. We still do. We'd like to open that more. I'd like to see it open up more for kids all over Washington and Oregon. And we have some kids coming in. I think it could be a lot more. And it's now what was called Camp Magruder. And I know there's a number of former students in the audience that know that. And usually when you talk to them, a lot of times people will talk about the opportunities they had. I mean, the facility that is utilized, you really can't find a better place. There's freshwater lake, there's an ocean, the ocean's right there, there's the jetty, there's sand dunes. It really gives you a full range of environments, and that's now called the Northwest Science Environmental Camp. So that is still being offered. A lot of things are happening. And I'm hoping they continue to happen. I guess in closing, what I'd like to just say, for me, it's been an absolute privilege to work with all of you and with parents, students throughout Washington, and actually I should say the surrounding state. And to me, it is absolutely amazing how fast 25 years goes. I look at, we have pictures of all the employees at the school, and they're all in a, from the most senior to the least senior, kind of, as they're moving through the list. And to me, I still feel like I'm the new kid on the block. And my picture is on the top row, very close to the far left of all of the employees in regards to the longevity of people at the school for the blind. So a lot has happened. I think a lot more is going to continue to happen. We have strong people in key positions at the school. And I just think one of the most important things for whoever comes in to fill my shoes once I leave is to make sure that a strong, solid working relationship continues with both blind consumer groups, with school districts, with parents, with students, and with the legislature to make sure that children that are blind and visually impaired children, whether it's at the School for the Blind or throughout the state, continue to receive the most appropriate and best education possible. Thank you very much.
At Services for the Blind, we've had such an incredibly rich and positive relationship with Dean at the school, and we are going to miss you, Dean, enormously. Nevertheless, we still have a lot of time to get the good out of you.
We have a lot to get done yet.
Yeah. But I just loved your image of planting seeds, because you have definitely done that, and that's going to go on and on. So I'm just grateful. For
once,
our relationship.
Once a farm boy, always a farm boy.
Yeah, that's fabulous. Yeah, so I guess what's striking me right now is how much connection and continuity we actually have together here in this room. I mean, I was just thinking about how many of you have been either working with us in DSB or involved in our rehab council, or you've all been so involved with this in so many ways, and so we are us, and we are you, and that's so important because we're all in this work together. So I just want to highlight some folks, particularly some of your members who have served and are currently serving on our State Rehabilitation Council. And that council is really important to the agency. It advises us on policy, and it reports to the governor and the legislature. And each of those council members brings a particular perspective to the agency, which is so valuable. So just to mention our current council members, Sue Amateur is our awesome chair. Debbie Cook is our executive director. Steve Fixdall is our vice chair. And then we also have Gloria Walling and Yvonne Thomas Miller. But many of you have previously served on the council as well. Galen, Floyd, Cindy Van Winkle, Denise Colley, Marlena Lieberg, Alcal Canfield, Carl Jarvis. Maybe I'm leaving somebody out, but this is so important to the agency. So I just want to thank you all for that. You're volunteers. You don't get paid anything. We reimburse you for travel. But no, it's just so valuable to the agency and keeps us connected with people, you know, who we really want to serve and who we want to partner with. So right now we currently have two vacant positions on our council. So we're looking for candidates each position on the council has a particular constituency that they represent, and the two vacant positions right now represent business. So that means if you're a business owner or you employ other people in some way, we would love to have you join the council. So let us know. We can help you submit your application to the governor's office. I also want to let you know that we have a number of our DSB staff joining you at this convention yesterday and today and so on. And so I'm just going to really quickly name who those folks are, because if you don't know them already, I hope you have a chance to connect and get to know them, because we are you, you are us, and we want to connect. So we have Michael McKillop, our deputy director, Arlene Ito, our assistant director for operations, Julie Brandon, our orientation and training center manager, Mark Adrian, our business relations specialist, Liddell Lockwood, our communications specialist, Bobby McCalden, our business enterprise program manager, Liz Tunison, our business enterprise technician, Sotea Oak, Seattle counselor, Gil Kupat, our Seattle counselor, Jonathan Utrera, Seattle counselor, Maureen Reggie, a rehab teacher, O&M Seattle, Jennifer Richmond, who you heard about this morning, a rehab teacher, O&M for our North region, Reggie George, assistive technology specialist from Yakima, and Lisa George, our reader driver. So, you know what? There's a lot of shared leadership, a lot of power in this room. And there are so many of you in here that we've worked with that I haven't even mentioned, former employees, et cetera. You've all been part of us. And, I mean, I'm looking at Doug Hildig over there and, you know, different people. We have a lot of power together. How many of you heard Paul Jajek talking yesterday? He talked about what you guys accomplished a few years ago when the agency, when the governor actually at the time was trying to move the agency into DSHS. But you guys showed up at the legislature and you stopped that in its tracks. But anyway, so there's a lot of power in this room. So, and it will continue to be so. Anyway, this is the time of year when DSB celebrates the customers, our customers who have completed their rehab plans during the year and who have gone to work and or kept good jobs. So I just want to, I'm happy to share with you that this year, 169 of our customers are competitively employed at an average wage of close to $20 an hour. And last year there were 192. That doesn't mean that this year was a worst year. It just means that every year is not exactly the same and things fluctuate. But things, what it means is that on a two-year average, things are going strong. And I just want to say again, these are not just numbers. We talk about numbers, but this means that each person has taken charge of their life and their economic situation. These guys are out supporting their families. They're earning benefits. They're paying taxes. They're contributing to their communities. And so from this year's numbers, and I hate to keep saying numbers, but there are six of our folks who started up their own small business and they're self-employed. And I think it's also interesting that the average age of people who were successful in employment this year, we had three at age 21 and two at age 84. So, hey, old guys, and I'm getting to be one of those, you know, don't underestimate yourself. So anyway, every year we publish the list of these jobs and the employers on our website, and that is, we haven't quite refreshed our website yet this year, but it will be up this week. But so check it out, because I think that list is pretty exciting. It really illustrates the range, you know, the wide range of occupations that our customers succeed in. It's not just, you know, five or six kind of jobs. It's amazing. It should be mind-opening for you. So I hope you will go to our website and check out that list when we've got it up later this week. So this leads me into our into mentioning the Workforce Investment and Opportunity Act. How many of you were here yesterday to hear Dan Fry? Okay. Yeah, so you kind of know. This is the first time that act has been updated since 1998, and that's the act that actually enables our agency to exist. So it's important, because without that act, our DSB would not exist and would not be funded. Anyway, so this new version of the act brings more than just vocational rehabilitation agencies together. It brings all of our workforce partners together to collaborate, and the whole concept is that we are presenting a skilled workforce to the world of business, and we're trying to bring our workforce together to meet business needs. So there are these core partners like Voc Rehab, like Employment Security and Department of Labor, and that includes like dislocated workers, out-of-school youth, et cetera, community colleges, Voc Tech, adult education programs. And so it's a big challenge, because we, all these different players have to come together and try to put together a plan for our state. So it's really kind of chaotic and crazy, but it's good in a lot of ways, because we're all coming to the table and trying to talk about, okay, who are we? Who are people that we really need to serve who haven't been served from our systems previously? And so people with disabilities actually have a great opportunity in this new scenario to be represented, to be represented at local areas and state, at the state level, and really make their voices heard. And so Mark Adrian from our agency and Michael McKillop have been involved in many, many conversations with these workforce partners around the state and at many levels, and are bringing our voice to the table. And so we want to expand awareness that access is, you know, it's about technology, but it's way beyond that. It's a really comprehensive approach. And I don't know if you guys have tried to, like, go to one-stop centers or anything, but they haven't been typically very accessible. But now we have a voice. Now we're going to be represented on these levels. And our staff is also very involved in terms of the electronic accessibility in making this a web-based format and helping people, making it possible for people to bring their own personal mobile devices to one-stops and that sort of thing. But another part of it is access to apprenticeships, and that's a big one. So that's part of what we're doing. Services to youth, that's another huge thing we're working on, because that's a big part of the reauthorization act. And so we are emphasizing services to youth and transition age kids. We've been doing this for a long time, but now we need to expand on it, and we want to expand on it. And so we're still offering our whole array of youth services. We want kids to get the skills they need, the pathways to work. We've been participating in K-12 IEP meetings with TVIs and families around the state. So we've had short-term summer workshops in Seattle and Spokane that do pre-employment skills training to youth 9 through 13. But we want to expand that to more locations throughout the state, and we want to do it more frequently throughout the year. And then we've had our fifth-year program at the School for the Blind, the LIFT program, which has been incredibly valuable, and we're hoping to sort of perhaps pump that up a bit more too. Bridge, our summer university academic program, has been good. We've had what we call Yes 1 and Yes 2, our summer work experience and independent living programs. And we're going to continue those and hopefully expand those. In partnership with the school, we also are exploring a job developer program at the school, and we're excited about that and hope to get back to you with more about that. we want to have more local work experiences around the state, not just in the summer, but we're hoping for after school and weekends. And so we're probably going to be inviting our partners to submit proposals to us pretty soon through an RFP process. So we're open to creative ideas about youth and how to get ready for the workforce. We've had a great relationship with Jack Straw Productions. How many of you have heard of them? Yeah. Anyway, and we're looking to partner with maybe other nonprofits. And, I'm just seeing more and more of the staff out there that I didn't even mention. Patty. Yeah. Anyway, yeah. Patty from our training center. Anyway, the deafblind community, we are looking to your organization, actually. You guys could submit a proposal to us so we could combine our funds. I don't know. I'm not timing myself, but I just want to say that we, you know, there are new exciting things at DSB that you may or may not know about. We have English as a second language instruction now in our orientation and training center, which is really cool. We are looking to do entrepreneurial workshops, and we're going to be doing more of them. We have been doing, but we're doing more to help folks figure out if self-employment is good for them, you know, or what it takes to start up a small business. Lots of new things happening, and our staff is spread out around you, so if you're curious, connect with about a particular thing, please connect with our staff. We have many reasons to celebrate and reasons that you have been involved in, and so I want to thank you, like our ADA 25th anniversary celebration this last year, where we honored Sue Amater, your own Sue Amater, who was so pivotal. So pivotal in that whole ADA total breakthrough that happened for us years ago and we're still benefiting from. We had a White Cane Safety Day events around the state where there were city council proclamations and many of you guys and our staff participated. That was fabulous. Anyway, I just want to say that I'm glad I don't have to follow Danielle because I did last time, and she has so much exciting stuff to share with us, too. So anyway, it's just a pleasure to be connected with everyone, and I just want to remind us all how connected we really are. We are totally connected, so. You're next.
Hi, I'm Danielle, and hi, Sarah. Thank you for that, Luoma. I don't know that it's going to be true today, but I'm happy to be here. And Dean mentioned Jennifer Fenton, who is now the director of the Ogden Resource Center, who was a colleague of mine through the State Library, and she was in the exhibits yesterday, on the table just behind mine, and she said she had no idea what to expect, and that it was so exciting in there, and we really were very busy. And at the end of the day, I said, you know what, I think this is actually one of my favorite things of the entire year, because I always have so much fun. So thank you for having me and letting me have fun. And I should recognize all my staff that is here. Ellen Benson. Moving on. I decided to play a little game at the library table in the exhibits yesterday. And I was asking people to guess how many books they thought were on BARD as of yesterday morning, 6:57 a.m. And in Price is Right style, the person getting closest without going over would win a prize, which is a beautiful silk scarf that came here during our China exhibit that I'll tell you more about later. And the winner was Glenn McCauley. So I'm hoping he will give the scarf to his beautiful wife, Ursula. And Glenn guessed 62,900. And yesterday morning, there were 69,849. So I know we want more, but I think that's pretty good. And more going up every week. And I know people are using it. We have really good statistics from that. We have a lot of people calling. So it's really fun. And if you need any help with that, definitely call us. We've got a bunch of people on staff who would be happy to work with you. I think Cindy said maybe I should mention some history things because it was the 25th anniversary, but I might be imagining that.
No, I didn't.
Okay. Well, first I asked some of my staff that had been here, been at the library for a very long time, and my favorite response, and this wasn't Alan, I'm letting off the hook, was from somebody who said, 25 years ago, I was this age. 15 years ago, I was this age. Now I'm this age, and I don't remember anything else. So, so I had to go on my own and pick a couple things. And as my friends up here have mentioned, also 1990, Jan Ames was the director, and she has meant so much to me. I just love her. She's been a wonderful mentor. 2000, 2001, the shift from cassette, or the shift to cassettes, pardon me, was completed, mostly. 2009 was when we started with the digital talking books and the digital talking book machines. That was when we were recognized as the Network Library of the Year of the National Library Service for the Blind and Physically Handicapped. And that's also when our budget woes really started happening. So that wasn't that great. That wasn't a good part of that. And now, 2014-15, we've got the apps for Bard now on multiple devices, which is great. And another great thing is now the regional libraries, like us, we are allowed to put our locally produced books up on Bard. Which it's a wonderful way to share. It's easier than how we did interlibrary loan before. It's quick. It's getting more information up there, and it's adding to what NLS is adding. So that is really exciting. And our audiobook production department is just cranking away. They are up to, I think, 77 narrators, close to 25 reviewers. One of our staff is moving full-time into audio to help with getting our books, about 300 of them, that haven't been remarked up and formatted to go on Bard, up to Bard, and working on our new books. And I think last month they finished 14 books, some of them quite long. And so they are going at great guns. I'm very excited about that. And then on the other side of the budget, 2015... we have flat funding. We had no cut, so I will not complain, but we are still a lot lower than we were when I started in 2008, but I truly believe that we have that flat funding, and we are part of a revenue account and got an increase in filing fees for this revenue account because of you guys. All the calls you made to your legislators, the letters, the emails, the people that went and saw their legislators in person, went to hearings, it really paid off because we would have been in big trouble without that dollar increase. The dollar doesn't sound like very much, but over the course of a year, and these are filings when somebody buys a house or remodels a house, things like that. So now it's at $3 instead of $2. And I think if we hadn't gotten that, the state library, which is where we get our budget mostly, was looking initially at about a $67,000 hole for this year, this fiscal year. So you guys really made a difference, and I appreciate that. And you've... you've done that before, going to a hearing at the legislative building when... they wanted, I don't even, 3 or 4 years ago, when they wanted to smush us into a bizarre agency made up of like 9 different things that sort of were similar,
by a thread. And the chair of that committee, actually, within a half an hour of everyone testifying and the hearing ending, she sent me an email and said, "We're not putting you in the group." Like, then they ended up not doing it at all, but we were out because of you guys. So our outreach efforts, I know, you know, I think it's the same for Dean and Luoma and all of us getting the word out about our services, about our organizations throughout the state can be really difficult. So that's always been something we've been working on as we can travel, as we can afford that, as we can go on trips in the state to visit our friends or family and stop in at places so it's not costing the library anything, mailing letters to veteran centers, you know, all sorts of stuff. And it's worked. You know, we have new patrons added every year. I'm really pleased about that. We get into the retirement homes and care facilities, and they do have a very high turnover of staff. They're activity directors, and we have to, you know, it's difficult. You have to start over with them almost every year, maybe even more often. And so that's a challenge, getting out there. And I was very lucky. Several months ago, I got a grant for outreach, $25,000, essentially for travel, you know, mileage, hotel, materials, things like that. And I divided it up, adults, older adults, and kids. And so Amy Ravenholt, our assistant manager, has been traveling around and going to as many places as possible. She's trying to hit the entire state. Some counties and towns will not be there, but as she can get around or get people together. She's starting primarily in eastern Washington because of the weather. And if anybody has talked to Frank or seen the email, he went on some visits for a couple days with Amy. And we really think that it's more meaningful and it's more legit if there's a patron there, if there's someone who's blind or visually impaired. If I'm there trying to sell this book, it might not be as compelling as if Frank was with me, for example. So what we did is send out an email message on our listserv, which hopefully you saw. If not, I'll tell you. We want to collect a list, sort of a database of names of people who are interested in participating in outreach, which means you would give us your name and your city and what you would like to do if it's really something specific. And then if we are going to be in that area and the timing and funding works, we'll get a hold of you and see if you can join us on those visits, or see if you have, maybe your chapter has a meeting, or you have some inns in your community that we can visit. So if you want to be part of that, you want to get a hold of David Junius, J-U-N-I-U-S, at the library. He's the outreach and volunteer coordinator. And you can call the general phone number at the library, 800 or 206, and ask for him. Or email, it's david.junius@sos.wa.gov, just like mine, but his name. So that, we hope, is going well, which leads me into our former children's librarian, who I know some of you worked with, Mandy Gonson, who was just amazing. She really, we hadn't really had a children's program for a couple years other than what those of us who were there could sort of eke together and try and have an event or try and, you know, who can talk to the parent the best or the teacher the best and really do our best. And she got so much going and so many families and kids activated and interested. And she is a very meticulous person, I'll tell you. She planned out her itinerary for her half of the money. A city, the ESD, the school, the mileage, the time, the date, everything for the whole state. It was fantastic. And then she left. So for about the last 6 months, I think, which has been over the summer reading period of time, which is a big time for the kids, I've been trying to be the youth librarian with the help of one of our staff members, Rocio Vargas, and We were worried. We thought it wasn't going well because we weren't hearing any feedback. But then kids came to our culminating event, and we heard good feedback, and we even got a card, and we thought, oh, thank goodness. We were doing all of this, trying our best, you know, in the absence of somebody who really specializes in children and youth services. So it worked. It got us by, and I have just hired somebody for our new youth services librarian, and I'm really excited about her. Her name is Marion. I am sure if you say Marion the librarian to her, she will have heard that before. so you might think twice about that. She's in Montana right now, a teen librarian at the Butte Public Library, and will be moving over here, and her first day will be December 7th. That first week will probably be very overwhelming for her, and then there are the holidays, but in January, I want to look at having at least one sort of reception at the library to welcome her and the family groups in your organization and the other consumer groups and Janet George, you know, anybody who has any connection with kids in the state to come and meet her and brainstorm and just get connected. And then once she's had a chance to take a breath, I'm going to give her Mandy's list and say, here you go. It's already planned out. We really wanted to hit the schools at the beginning of the school year. That's not working out, but we're still going to get there. So we will get there for this year. And if the outreach appears successful, we're keeping statistics, how many people signing up as best we can by looking at their address and things like that. How many places visited, how much time, how circulation increases from that, or you know anything like that. We have a statistics genius at the library, Tyler Kay, so he's keeping that. And if I can show our board of trustees that that was successful, they said they may give us $25,000 each year for outreach, which would be incredible. So I'm hoping that'll pan out. And just a change, another change in the library, not us, not our library, but the former state librarian did step aside to take a job working on managing, organizing federal documents. And so they have started a national search for a new state librarian. There is no deputy state librarian right now, because they want the new state librarian to be able to hire the deputy state librarian. And there are a few other empty positions. And these searches can take a long time. You know, hopefully we get Dean's person and the library person soon. Until then, Greg Lane, who is our deputy secretary of state, is the acting state librarian. And he's the first to admit he's not a librarian. So he's been great to work with, because anything I ask for, he's like, sure, because he doesn't really have any way to tell me that's a bad idea. So I kind of wish he would stay my boss, because I really like him. But hopefully the person that comes in, you know, will be just as great. And they are making sure to hire somebody who actually has a library and information science degree, which is meaningful to me as someone who has that degree. And we're getting a little pushed out. I won't even go into that discussion, though. The last thing I wanted to share, we had this amazing opportunity. We had people from the China Braille Press and the China Library for the Blind in Beijing do a tour of the library, and we were kind of talking. They said, well, do you think, you know, we should collaborate and stay in touch? And I said, of course, thinking, I don't know, we'll email each other or something. They came back the next day with more people and said, well, what do you think about us doing an exhibit here? And I said, that's a great idea. We'd love that. Were you thinking sometime next year? And they said, no, September 21st. And that was like 4 weeks away. And oh my gosh, how can we possibly do this? But I truly believe, well, some of the things that I get my hands into might seem frivolous and not connected, the more our name can get out there, the more people will know about us, and it can be a form of outreach and support, and getting important people to come, that kind of thing can be really beneficial. So I said, why so soon? And they said, well, the First Lady of China, one of her areas of interest is children with disabilities. And she was going to be in town with President Xi Jinping in Seattle starting on the 22nd. So their goal was to get her, or and maybe President Xi, to this exhibit. And so we were, you know, I had Secret Service, U.S., and Chinese equivalent Secret Service, and the Chinese ambassador to the United States, and these giant, like, black Suburbans with tinted windows in front of the library. It's like there every weekend. And very excited, a lot of work. And then, I don't even know if I should say this, but I probably always share too much information. They decided, the Secret Service-y people, that our building was not secure enough. Why? Yes, because Amazon. Not really. There's just so much construction in our neighborhood, Amazon, taking over the area. And there are about 1 million cranes. And I guess it's hard to keep snipers off cranes. And all these new tall towers. And depending on where they were in the building, for those of you that have been there, one side is all glass. So we didn't get them. But we did get the special minister of information for the People's Republic of China and some other bigwigs, and Luoma and Dean and Denise and a few, Mika, and I don't want to leave any, Sue, a couple other people come to the ribbon cutting, which was a really fun event, and I'm probably running out of time, but I'm a talker. As you know. So I thought, you know, we spent an entire weekend talking about how to do this ribbon cutting. And in my head, like, it's a ribbon, you tie it somewhere, or two people hold it end to end, and you get a pair of scissors and you cut it. What is the big deal? So they're having me stand in different places and taking pictures and doing this, and I'm moving, and then they're measuring. And I never understood until the day before, when they said, I needed to get 9 women to come for the ribbon-cutting ceremony. What? What are you talking about? And it, I guess, you know, I learned a lot of cultural things, which is really neat. And we got a ton of Braille, including a ton of kids' Braille from China. And they're sending us some videos as well. So that's pretty neat. But these women had these beautiful red red and gold decorated platters. And on each one was an enormous red bow. And not just like the bow on your sneakers, but a Christmas bow where it goes all around, all over the place. And then there was a length of ribbon, and the next girl with a big bow and a platter, all in a U shape, 9 of them, because we had 7 ribbon cutters. And they brought scissors with gold handles engraved with Chinese characters. And so we each stood in a section and at the same time, sort of, cut the ribbon in all these places. And I don't know, you know, if we're around or at the banquet, if anybody who was there has, you know, any comments, I just thought it was so cool. Nothing I would have ever expected. And I know that there's a song or something, Big in Japan, but at least for a couple days we were big in China because there were tons of Chinese media there. And the next day I was shown at least 8 print and online publications in China that were major papers. And their main news station had a video, which he's not here, but it was mostly Kirk Adams' head. But they had a video on their major news, which was great, but also punctuated how annoyed I was with our local media. We called them, we talked to them, we emailed, and none of them showed up. We'll keep pushing it. Becky Bell got us media one year. Maybe I'll hire her next time. But anyway, this China thing was really fun. I know it was hard on my staff. We had to make break rooms around the library. We had to move the pop machine. The workers who built the exhibit into the rooms, it took 8 days. This was huge wooden boxes to customs on a ship from Beijing. Probably cost hundreds of thousands of dollars. So it was very disrupting, I think, for a little while. But I know, some people got a lot out of it, and they've stayed in touch. I just got an email a couple days ago about these videos they're sending. They left some technology with me. There was a really neat, kind of like the big iPhone size or iPod size, magnifier that would play audio and contrast colors and size and had a USB port and a whole bunch of things. And you turn it on, and there are these icons, and they're all in Chinese. But you could kind of figure it out because there were pictures. And it was very, very cool and not a cheap thing that they had developed. And there had been some kids at the exhibit, and so they said, I want you to give this to a kid. And one of our kids, he's 11, and he's really, really cool. I gave it to him, and he wrote me a letter and has been so delighted. And they have a friend who is from China, and he's an 11-year-old boy and figuring it out just fine. So so it's all good. And I may get a chance to visit the Braille library and the Braille press in the summer. So I'm hoping for that. I guess that's all. Galen's standing behind me. Thank you.
Okay, as our mic runners get ready, I'm going to ask that people hold comments so that people with questions can get their answers. Are our mic runners ready?
I have a microphone, would like to ask a question.
Okay, Cindy.
Cindy, yeah. I have two, actually. Dean, what is being done to hire or at least provide a search for viable candidates for leadership positions, administrative positions, through the School for the Blind? I know that you have several people who are blind or visually impaired as teachers and other supportive staff, but it doesn't seem to me that you guys do very good at hiring blind people in administrative positions. And so I'm wondering why, and if you guys are planning to do anything to rectify that. And then my other question has to do with access technology. And I'm wondering, Luoma and Dean, if you have considered implementing some training with NVDA for your students and customers, respectively, so that not necessarily, although I use NVDA now personally all the time at home, but it is such a great tool that you can take with you anywhere. And so if you go for a job at a place that does not already have something accessible, you can make it accessible on the fly. And it just seems like we should be really moving toward not necessarily placing people in a position where they have to ask somebody to purchase something for $1,400 when they can take it with them everywhere they go. So those are my two questions.
Okay. Is this on? Is this on? Yep. Okay. Well, first, your first question, we do advertise those positions. The key factor is what we find out is, and we try to encourage people to go back to school and get the right credentials. I can't hire people into those positions based on certification unless they have the right credentials. I'm going to give an example of that right now in regards to the superintendent's position. And I'm not sure exactly why this was done, but the governor's office was really surprised. I was pushing hard for them to post the position and get this going early on, because the credentials that are required for the superintendent at the School for the Blind are not in WAC. They're written right into RCW. Very specific. And in checking with this to get a little history, why was that done? Well, first, it probably was important to make sure that the person has the right credentials to do the required job. But the other part was, over the years, there have been numerous times they tried to merge the two schools together, and by establishing what the credentials are, and it specifically has to, you have to be a teacher of the blind and visually impaired and X number of years administration background and so forth. I think they were put in place there to prevent some of those collapsing, just saying, well, the person at the school for the deaf will be the superintendent at the school for the blind also. So the other positions, we have had people that are blind and visually impaired in leadership roles. The last person was our outreach director, Dee Amundson, and she decided she stepped down from that position. She wanted to go back as a teacher. The position basically are posted, and people have the opportunity. We have not had the applicants, Cindy, of people that are visually impaired for those key positions that have the right credentials. Yes.
I did turn it on. It just takes a minute. The position, there are some positions that probably, I believe, should require somebody to have a knowledge of Braille in leadership positions. And I know recently that was filled by somebody that didn't, and I guess I don't understand how that position would have been hired by somebody that would have a good knowledge of Braille.
Okay, I'm sure you're referring to the library position.
The ORC.
Yeah, the ORC. Yeah. Well, you remember that position is Instructional Resource Center and the Braille Access Center. Now, when we looked at the candidates and based on their background and so forth, by the way, the person that has hired is taking Braille, and by the end of this year, I think we'll have a pretty good background in Braille. But she also has her master's degree in library science. If we would have had other people that applied, we didn't have a lot of applications again. It went out through a lot of places for that position. But we were looking with someone to have a strong background. Colleen did not have that. Colleen Lyons, who was there before, and I had hired Colleen. We started out that position with the development of the Braille Access Center, the Braille Access Center. We did have the IRC. We basically got that years later, and we combined those two positions under Colleen. But we also realized if we're going to expand services, Instructional Resource Center, and make those connections, there's really an advantage to have somebody with a library media background. So that's how that decision was made. But again, what I would highly encourage people, if you're interested, like in anything, in getting into some leadership roles, please go back, get the credentials. We're required to have the credentials for most of our leadership positions because they require not only a teaching degree in a lot of those positions, they also require, with changes in state law right now in regards to what's called TPEP, Teacher Principal Evaluation Program, which is required, that person who is a lead for outreach, a lead person under a principal, they have to have their principal's credentials on top of their TVI area. So it can't be a political appointment. It can't be an appointment of people without the credentials. They're going to have the credentials by state law. And we would like more blind and visually impaired people to apply for positions. We just have not had that happening. And we do advertise through all the different sources. The second question, and I'll be quick on that, NVDA. I really love NVDA. I think our kids are using it. At our school, I feel we need to push more on that in regards to it. The kids, I think, are sometimes ahead of the staff on it. They're using it all the time. I think it's a great program. It's changing rapidly. It's improved vastly over the last year and a half. And the nice thing about it, it's a free service.
Hi. I'm going to ask Michael McKillop to respond to the technology question. Are you out there, Michael?
The question is, NVDA, are we at DSB looking to do training for NVDA? And certainly our AT specialists do. Reg George is here, and he can probably talk to you about how they're all involved in getting NVDA into people's hands, because, like you said, Cindy, it's free. It's fabulous. Why not? We are also looking at broadening the instruction in the OTC. And what I love about Julie Brannon as program manager, she's created space for the instructors to do curriculum development. So after every term, they've got a week to create new curriculum and to change up what they're doing. So currently it's not there, but it can be and it should be.
If you have a question, please raise your hand and call your name.
This is Glenn. Okay. And Cindy asked part of what I was going to ask, but then I wanted to also ask Danielle. I think if you go back and look at your contest, you said there was only 69,000 and something there. I told you 629,000. I think if you go back and look at, so I was way off the mark. So I mean, although I'm sure my wife would love the scarf, I'd rather see the real winner get the.
Oh, I'll look right now.
Okay, any other questions out there?
Yes. This is Julie Brannon.
I was after Glenn. I was told I'm after Glenn. It's Chris. And Danielle, I wanted to, this is in reference to the China exhibit, mm-hmm. and I'm wondering, was the Braille that the Chinese brought over Braille in Chinese for the exhibit, or was it Braille in English produced in China?
Both. And I actually, forgot to mention, Brian from NVP was there for 2 days and brought the B2G for people to look at and brought some of the Braille that they produce. So that was nice to have him there for 2 days. The exhibit was on for a week, 7 days. And I have both at the library. I actually brought three books with me here that are in Chinese Braille, which is phonetic. It's our Braille with a lot of other stuff because they have more sounds and different diacritics and contractions, that kind of thing. And I have one that they produced that's in English. And I do think a lot of what they I have a history, like the major history of China, 18 volumes, two sets. If anyone wants to come to the library and look at them. And if I remember right, those are in English. But anyway, yes, Chris, we have both.
Mm-hmm. I have a question. And this is kind of really unusual question, but this is Sarah Edick. I was just licensed as a certified peer counselor for people with mental health challenges. And I know Danielle is willing to work with people with Department of Vocational Department of Behavioral Health and Recovery. My concern is that there's not a lot of support for the blind in the community. I don't know if at the school, but I've noticed there's been a lack of support from Department of Services for the Blind. I'm not saying that to criticize. I want to see that change, and I want to know how that is going to change. I don't think it's going to change without the help of somebody who's been there, done that, got the T-shirt.
This is Luoma. I would be happy to connect with you and hear more about what kind of support you would like to see from Services for the Blind. Yeah, so I don't know if we should do this now, but probably just one-on-one.
I'll just throw out real quick, yes, since it's good timing. Sarah put down 60,000. So you're closest.
Okay. Congratulations, Sarah. Unfortunately, we've run out of time. Let's give our big three a big hand. And do we have a door prize?
I have an announcement to make before. Oh. Before door prizes happen, this is Julie. I'm actually talking for someone else. I'm talking for Marlena Lieberg. She wants you to know if you need a volunteer just to stand up. And the volunteers have been instructed to connect with you. So a lot of people are saying they're not finding volunteers, but just stand up and they'll come and assist you. Thanks.
That reminds me. Thank you, Julie. Before we have our door prize, John and Carol McConnell will be selling calendars for the Pierce chapter. So connect with them. Door prize?
Thank
Okay. All right, what we have a goodie bag with an assortment of goodies and $10 from the South Kitsap Council of the Blind. Oops. And let's see, the name I have for that is, could you hold this for me? Thank you. Miriam Torres. Okay. Nope. Okay. Mike O'Neill. Okay. Okay, let's see. James Bryant. Is James Bryant here? Okay, awesome.
Excellent. Congratulations. Someone left a brown messenger bag up at the front tables here. Steve Fixel? Okay. Oh. Well, if you're missing a messenger bag, we've got it. We will convene back here at 1:30. Go forth, mingle. Any other? Yes. Okay. Eric Hunter, our treasurer, is up here. At the front table, if anybody needs to get money to Eric, do so now. He won't be here forever, and whatever that means. So see you back here at 1:30.
Thanks, Galen.
Oh, sure. I wonder if that's Jeff Tom's bag.
Oh, it's yours?